Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me. Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those new year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details.
Experian.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts, gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we have a full slate for you on the show. The main event is a conversation with Brian Moylan, who has been on the show before, and he recaps a bunch of Bravo shows and reality shows for Vulture, and he also writes the Housewives Bulletin for them, which is an every other week newsletter with some great musings and roundups and comments and just tidbits that it's really fun to get into my inbox every other Friday. So I highly recommend signing up for that. But in a recent dispatch of his, he wrote an essay about the state of the Housewives reunion and about a trend that he's been noticing in like the different ways that Housewives seasons have been ending and how that impacts sort of the effect and sort of the utility of a Housewives reunion. And I really loved it. And now the dust has settled on three recent big reunions, the Roni reunion, Salt Lake City, and Potomac. I had Brian back on to discuss some of the very honestly astute points that he brought up in that essay and to use those three recent reunions as sort of examples of some of those ideas. We had a really great chat. Brian's been, again, he's been on before. He's one of the best in the biz. So it was a true pleasure to talk to him about this. And it really made me think about some of the different trends that we are seeing and sort of the direction that Housewives is going. So I think you'll really enjoy that conversation. But I'll also go a little bit longer up top here today about Summer House and Southern Charm and also this recent Bravo podcast boom. So I post a couple things online about it because people have opinions on this. And I think partially it's because there were four announced podcasts by Bravo people in like 3 days. So it was last Friday, Brynn announced a podcast. And then on Monday, it was Gia Giudice, Michelle from The Valley, and then Aaron and Abe all announced podcasts. I pointed out online that nobody on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City currently has a podcast. Whitney used to have one, and Meredith and Seth had one for 11 episodes, neither of which has released a new episode in over a year. So currently, none of them have podcasts, which is a good thing. And I also said that I wanted to be very clear that I'm very much not against Bravo people having podcasts. That would be ridiculous. I just think that it's worth investing a little bit more time into your show and building up a fan base that is particular to you and invested in your story and your storylines and your life before you do so. Otherwise, to me, it can feel like a cash grab. It can feel a little bit unearned. Like there's an implication when these people announce podcasts that like we should all follow that person over to yet another platform to hear their story. And it's like, well, we watch your show to hear your story right now. You know what I mean? And like, so why not save some of that for the reality show, continue to build up that sort of goodwill, to build up the investment in your story, and then start a podcast? Everybody that started the podcast last week has been on their shows for two seasons or less, except for Gia. That's a different case. But that's sort of just my point of view on it. And again, I'm like, everybody's entitled to start a podcast. Like that is not, that would be a ridiculous thing for me to gatekeep as somebody with a podcast. Like that's crazy. And there are plenty of great podcasts from Bravo people. And I have been on some of them. I was recently on Sheena's podcast. So I'm not fundamentally opposed to them having podcasts. Like a lot of people who sort of responded to these posts seem to be like, some people's point of view on it is people who are on Bravo shows currently should not have podcasts. That's what people think. As a blanket sort of rule, I think that's a tough thing to have, especially like, let's say somebody comes onto a show already having a podcast, which has happened a lot. Like, I think that's a little bit too intensive a point of view on it personally, but I understand the idea behind it, which is like, control the story, keep it on the show, yada, yada, yada. I get that. But like, I think it can sometimes turn into a fun thing to have these sort of sideshows, like it honestly was during Scandoval for me. Like, I enjoyed watching that new episode of Vanderpump Rules and then having Sheena's podcast, Lala's podcast, and all those other podcasts to get sort of the more superfluous behind the scenes tea. Like, I liked that part of it. It can feel like sort of an extra full-time job, but like, sometimes it can be fun, but sometimes it can also feel like a little bit, I don't know, somewhere between like unsustainable and self-indulgent. I don't know. Like, it's sort of a mix of those two vibes for me. I will say, of the four that were announced, I think that Aaron and Abe's to me has the most potential because it is a couple. It has like that more specific honed in point of view. The come together name is actually pretty clever, I will say. And one idea I had during this discourse while I was going on this week was like, what if Bravo just took it in-house like it has with the Hot Mic podcast hosted by Alex Baskin, who executive produces some of the shows out in California? Like, what if each Bravo show had a corresponding podcast where it's either like, you know, another producer hosting them, or it's the cast rotating in as guest hosts or something like that? Like, I think it would have to serve a different function than the after shows do. But like, for example, HBO shows pretty much all have corresponding podcasts, and those to me are additive. They fill in some of the blanks and they sort of explain certain things and they kind of go deep on certain like rabbit holes. That to me is what sort of maybe a Bravo associated podcast should do. And the Hot Mic podcast sometimes does do that. I listen to a lot of those interviews and they're sometimes great. They're sometimes kind of whatever, and sometimes they're really great. And I guess if you go in-house with it, you sort of risk not being able to sneak in certain behind the scenes tea or certain things like that, because that Bravo would want to control. But that is one idea for them to sort of contain some of this feeling that like, everybody needs to have a podcast. You know what I mean? I'm not against that fundamentally. I really am not. As we know, anybody who can buy podcast equipment and a microphone and plug it into their computer and release it as a podcast, and more power to them. And I wish them all good luck in doing it. And I hope that they last a long time to prove that these are worthwhile endeavors. But yeah, those are just my two cents on that. I can't really say that much about it, but I watched the premiere of The Valley, the season two premiere. I got the screener. And I saw someone else say that they had also watched the screener, and they said that it's teeing up a very dark season of reality TV. And I agree with that. But also, it's going to be amazing. Like, the premiere is full of a couple surprises. There's some tea spilled. There's a lot going on in all of the couples, and they really waste no time getting into it. And you also might see a familiar face on screen at one point. That's all I can say about that. All right, this week's Summer House. I have a couple random notes before I get into sort of the bigger topics. I thought it was actually fun seeing Gabby without Lindsay there. Lindsay and Lexi were not there in the weekend that we're watching. Like, I thought it was fun to see Gabby advising Amanda on her bathing suit line. I thought it was great seeing her going out with just the boys. Like, I think it, you know, when you get labeled as sort of like the person's sidekick or shadow or whatever, as Gabby, I think has been labeled by a lot of viewers, pulling that person out of that situation and proving that they can still kind of move around the house was a good thing. And she seemed really fun to be around. And I think it really makes sense for her to be advising Amanda on the swimsuits in that moment. So like, I loved that. I thought the party was amazing. The pirate themed party that Carl threw. I loved Sierra and Amanda's bird costumes, the giant ship they had. And it's funny, I feel like in all the previews, we were seeing Kyle and Craig in this raft that I figured was in the pool, but it's actually just sort of but it's actually just situated in the middle of a giant blue tarp that's supposed to feel like the ocean, just like sitting on the grass. So that made me chuckle once I realized that. We also get Carl and this yoga instructor that he invited out for another party. And Paige pointed out in the after show they kind of look like siblings. And I agree with that. And I lost my shit at Sierra talking about in the after show that this yoga instructor that Carl invited out as sort of as his new love interest invited Sierra to her trampoline class that she teaches. And Sierra was like, but I didn't go. The way she said it was just extremely funny. There is the preview for next week where we see obviously the continuation of Paige and Craig and then Craig and Kyle. Before the season, a lot of them had said in interviews, oh, we have our first Summer House threesome. And everyone was sort of speculating on who it can be. And it seems to be from the teaser that it's going to be Imrul and just two random women, which like, okay, boring. You know what I mean? Like, we don't even see the women that he hooks up with because they don't show them on camera. They probably didn't sign their releases. So I'm sort of like, that's the threesome we've been teasing? Underwhelming. But that's something that's not underwhelming to me is Craig and Kyle. So Craig is out for his one weekend of the summer, and I died at him. He's driving in the car with Paige and Gabby, and Craig's like talking about the Kyle thing. And he's like, well, like Kendall Jenner and Kylie Jenner both have competing alcohol brands, which like amazing, obsessed. And I think is actually, it's at once an apt comparison, because if you're just talking about the idea that Kyle was mad at Craig for endorsing another product and hit that in a similar range as Loverboy, then yeah, that's a completely apt comparison. But I think it also points to the fact that Craig is sort of fundamentally misunderstanding what Kyle is mad about. The reason why Kyle is keeping this going is not because Craig endorsed Spritz Society. That's not what it is. I think it's because he feels as though Craig has misrepresented the conversations that him and Kyle had and sort of how it was all communicated and went down in terms of like being offered a stake in Loverboy or being offered an investment opportunity in Loverboy or like how Craig really brought it to Kyle and sort of avoided the topic. I think that's really what Kyle is mad about, because then it sort of, in his mind, makes him look like a sketchy businessman, makes him look greedy, yada, yada, yada. But like that, to me, the comment is at once funny and apt and also sort of misunderstanding the situation from Craig's perspective. At least that's sort of how I look at it. I loved how Jesse was the one who came down to dinner and he was like, wait, did I miss the beef being squashed? Like, you're getting along really well. And then, of course, it becomes awkward right away and Craig and Kyle start kind of being passive aggressive to one another. And I will say, it's like Craig can be very immature in these more serious, intense topics. Like, he's very much avoiding having this conversation with Kyle that night. He wants to have it the next day. And you know what? That is completely his prerogative. And I understand when he went back to talk to Paige about it, he was like, listen, like, I knew that was not going to be just some quick thing. And it shouldn't be some quick thing. Like, that was supposed to be a long, deep conversation. And I didn't feel like having it on this first night, which, again, totally get it. But still, the way that he's doing it, he sort of like storms away to the kitchen. He's sort of shutting down. Like, I've already told you 3 times I don't want to have this conversation now. And Kyle is a bit like a dog with a bone. So those two things aren't going to match up well. But I think, you know, it's hard. Like, I just think at the end of the day, like, again, I feel 2 ways about it. I think Craig is very much, he's entitled to endorse another brand. Like, Kyle does not control that. But I also believe that he probably handled the communication of that poorly. And that I don't think that Kyle fucks around with business. And that's sort of where I'm landing. Obviously, we haven't seen the big conversation that's going to happen in next week's episode. But that's where I'm landing right now. And also, as Paige points out, like, Craig has no concept of how annoying it is for Paige, his girlfriend, that he keeps pushing it off. We also heard that Kyle had texted him. Like, he is pushing off resolving this, which increases and prolongs the awkwardness for his girlfriend in the house with Kyle and Amanda. And he has no concept for that. And then that gets back to a comment that Sierra made on Watch What Happens Live about Craig this week, which is like that he was only thinking about himself in all these situations. So speaking of Paige and Craig, I really liked the conversation we saw between Amanda and Paige. She's doing, you know, they're talking about how like Paige is doing everything that she's always wanted to do. As Amanda said, this is the person that you wanted to be. This is what you wanted to be doing when I first met you. What was it? 5 or 6 years ago. And this is coming to fruition right now. Like, why would you not pursue that? Why would you not double down on it? Why would you not see where it takes you? And that's a great point. I really liked this conversation because it hammers home that their friendship is strong enough to withstand the bullshit between Kyle and Craig. And I like that they took themselves out of the sort of couple and couple situation to have this one-on-one conversation and to talk about the fact that like both Kyle and Craig, both of their partners, like they're both seeking to be validated as right in the Spritz situation by their respective partners, even if I think both Paige and Amanda don't think that their partner is completely right. And I think that's right. Like neither Craig or Kyle is completely right in that situation. I'm glad that Paige and Amanda are both recognizing that and not just privately, but also admitting it to one another. I think that was really nice to see. And Paige is also explaining to Amanda, like she's relaying the conversation about the dinner they had on that Thursday night at the Australian restaurant. And she was like, listen, like, he is just adding to my anxiety about this tour. I'm going to 35 cities. I'm already anxious about it. And he's just adding to it. He's making me also worry, not just about the tour, but also now, how do I still make him a priority? Because now I know that he feels in type of way about that. And she says this quote, she says, I have a feeling that when I do this tour, I'm going to hate Craig. Verbatim what she said. And that's an intense statement. And like, But again, I think she's correct in that, like, he is sort of heaping this pressure on her when she's already feeling pressure on this major tour. I mean, they were selling out places like Radio City Music Hall for their podcast tour. Like, that's major. That's a lot of pressure, and anybody would be nervous about that. And then we have this conversation that they have in the raft, pre-Kyle and Craig's raft conversation. And she's like, my career is way different than when we met, and I don't feel bad about that. That's a little bit of a change from the confessional moment that we got a couple of weeks ago, where she was like, my career has changed a lot and I feel bad about how it would impact him. So I think she's kind of beyond the sympathy for it a little bit. And Craig says, that's a little unfair. It doesn't mean that I'm not happy for you. I just want to know how I fit into that. And again, completely fair. I just think the way that it's being presented to her is like a little bit, oh, poor me. You know, it's a little bit like, well, what about me? And it's like, well, why don't we come to her being like, hey, like, I will meet you in XYZ cities. I will do this on my end to alleviate some of that pressure, but also make sure that we can still be connected. But that's not how it's being presented. And then they talk about having status check-ins, and she says, I'll let you know if you're fired or not. Harsh. But again, she says, Craig thinks that what her presentation of things is harsh when she looks at it as straightforward and like sort of no bullshit. You know, is that gendered? I don't know, but it's interesting. And then I'm seeing a lot online based on this week's episode and the after show, which I'll get into in a second, is that people are saying that she should have broken up with him way earlier, which like, yeah, like, but as she says in the after show, it's much easier to say that from the outside and after the fact. But when you're in a relationship like this, like when your lives are so intertwined, when you have so many moving parts in your life, like Paige and Craig both have, it's hard to stop and really make a huge decision like that after 3 years of dating. Like, she's filming a reality show. She's gearing up for this 35-city tour. He also has just filmed a reality show and tours his podcast and is doing his business. Like the idea of finding time in there to break up, if you're even getting to that point of like, oh, we actually should break up, and recognizing that, that's difficult. And I don't even think that she's thinking about these things. It's like things to break up with somebody over. It's kind of like how last season, like, Lindsay acknowledged that her and Carl were having major issues, but in her mind, they were just going to work through them. They weren't things to break up over. And I think that that's not exactly the same as it is for Paige, but I just don't think she's gotten to a point where she's recognizing those major issues as something to end the relationship over. And as we see in the trailer for the season, at some point in this season, Paige breaks down over seemingly these conflicting feelings she's having about Craig, where it's like, if I end this, if we break up, like, does this all go away? Like, what? Like, how does that, what does that mean for my life, for our life? And like, I think that's totally valid. I think it's a little bit premature to like accuse her of stringing him along in that way, because I don't think that she's at the point yet where she's like, oh, this relationship is done. So I don't think she's there yet. I think she's getting there, but I don't think she's there yet. Plus, we know from Giggly Squad that her anxiety was so bad during the Giggly Squad tour that she went on beta blockers to help her deal with it. So like, she was genuinely feeling this anxiety. And again, I kind of presume that it was from just the touring, but clearly Craig and what their and sort of the status of their relationship played into this a lot. Okay, Jesse and Sierra. They have chemistry, and Sierra admitted that on Watch What Happens Live. She said they flirt with one another, but it's not that deep for her. She said at some point, I forget if it was on Watch What Happens Live or on the show or after show, that like she's 90% sure that if she were to give him an opening, he would take it with her, which I believe, to be honest. And he commented on a clip.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Of her saying something on Watch What Happens Live, because she was talking about how she's done with showmances, he was like, where do I file my resignation? Which is funny. The one thing about Jesse is that, like, he will have a sense of humor about all this kind of stuff, which I think is really refreshing. And it's really good to have that self-deprecating approach to being on reality TV. And we know that also Lexi will go off on Sierra about, I'm guessing the flirting will get back to Lexi, and then she'll go off on Sierra. And that's not going to be a good look for her, but I guess we'll see. Sierra and Amanda were amazing on Watch What Happens Live. Sierra, again, said that Craig was sort of the reason why he wasn't seeing the writing on the wall. But the relationship is that he was really just kind of centering himself in these issues and not thinking about them as a couple, which that's her perspective. And then Amanda confirmed twice that Craig was kicked out of their wedding, not asked to leave, but told to leave. And when asked about if Lindsay deserves an apology, because Lindsay was painted as a liar, basically, when she brought up Craig being kicked out of the wedding, because remember a couple of reunions ago, she took the brunt of leaking the story. And then we found out last season that it was actually Danielle who leaked the story. And shout out to Sam Bush for breaking that story. But Amanda said that maybe Lindsay is owed an apology, but she doesn't remember exactly sort of like, you know, who said what. And she also refused to say why he was kicked out. And she said, we'll keep that in the family. You just have to think about what is Amanda not going to say on TV.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
All right, the after show. First of all, must watch the after show. It just started this week, so you're not behind. Like, they just started doing the Summer House after show this week for this week's episode. It's really good. They're really mentioning it all. And it starts with Sierra, Paige, and Amanda talking about Paige and Craig's breakup. And Sierra says things like, she's constantly having to be a mother for this man, and it's just not, it's like, enough is enough. Paige said that she sees it much more clearly now that she's out of it, and she tolerated too much in the relationship. Again, hindsight is 20/20. And this is one of the major quotes that stood out to me. Anytime I had a career milestone, he found a way to make it about him. Anytime it was something and it was for me, like a friend's wedding or a family wedding, he would find a way to make it about him and make me have a bad time. It was just embarrassing. That's something that I look back at now and I'm like, oh, wow, I really was very blinded. I had to do a lot of damage control while I was the one performing and about to go out on stage. When I started having panic attacks this fall when I was doing Giggly Squad, he just thought it was because I worked too much. So it played into his, you know, you work too much and you shouldn't be doing all this narrative. And then the producer asks, he never comprehended, oh, maybe I'm contributing to this anxiety. And Paige says, no, it would never be his fault. Again, I think that encapsulates sort of what we're seeing play out. That is definitely the Summer House Paige girl's perspective on the breakup. That is not Craig's perspective, but that is their perspective. And I tend to believe their perspective on it for right now, from what we're seeing. I'm really curious to see the final scene on Southern Charm. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon before the Southern Charm finale. I'll talk about some of the preview clips we've seen, but I have not seen that full scene yet. We also find out that he told Paige to watch a documentary about how touring broke up all of the members of ABBA's families, which they had a nice laugh about, because why would you tell your girlfriend, who is in the midst of a major tour for her career and having anxiety about it, that she should watch this documentary that explains that touring is actually, no, it's actually bad for relationships and families. Like, it sounds like he was just trying to have her feel bad for him and to, like, guilt her into stop working or something. And it's like, dude, come on. And then she says, looking back on it now, probably from the jump, did we have great communication? Probably not. And she talks about the idea of her being straightforward and him considering that to be harsh. And then she says, you know what? Like, right now it's career and then you. But then if we were to have kids, it would have been career, kids, and then you. You were always going to be third, but he needs to be number one. And she kind of insinuates that Craig had this sort of different idea of her in his head. Like, she brings up the fact that he was like, wait, you talk like really dirty on your podcast. Like, I don't know, was the insinuation that she shouldn't be cursing and talking dirty on the podcast? This says it all too. Paige wouldn't tell him certain career milestones because she knew that he wanted to be happy for her, but deep down he wasn't. Oof. That's a wild thought. All right, lastly, some Southern Charm tidbits. We got the reunion trailer this week. Madison, I loved how it started with the Madison pregnancy reveal, and I love that the cast did not know she was pregnant. So we see Leva and Austin and Vanita all sort of reacting to it in real time. I thought that was super fun, super cute. We're getting Sally versus Taylor, which we get in the finale. There's a clip from the finale where Sally is like, Taylor, hey, can we talk? And they're going at it about this sort of what they were saying about one another earlier in the season. Taylor walks away mid-confrontation yet again. And Sally's like taking it to her. I'm impressed by Sally in the clip that we saw. And I was laughing at Madison watching them from across the bar. But I feel like Taylor is just avoiding all confrontation all season. And it's like, you're not showing us why they kept you around on the show. Again, I think Morgan was right on my last episode where she said that like they kept Taylor around for the Shep stuff, but she barely even contributed to that. You know what I mean? Like she had some interesting thing to say about Shep and Sienna, but like she didn't play ball with the Gaston Sally stuff. Like I feel like they kept her over Olivia for the Shep stuff, but it's like Olivia would have been such a better, she would have gotten along with Sally and Molly. Like it would have felt more cohesive. And then I guess Taylor accuses Sally of, you know, weaponizing her uneasy ground with the other ladies on the cast this season. It's like, girl, I don't know. I just don't think she's cut out for this. I really don't. We have Craig versus Austin and Shep and Leva, and they say they're all terrified of him. Andy asks Craig about Paige's quote-unquote new man. And then we have the whole Vanita and JT thing blowing up, and she runs backstage to get her phone because she's going to show up. She's going to pull up some receipts on like her conversations with JT. I hope we actually get clarity there. Again, the opening scene of the finale came out earlier today, so I watched it, and it's JT and Vanita sort of talking about this whole thing about him allegedly telling his barber that quote unquote some black girl is throwing herself at me and my girlfriend's gonna be mad at it. And then he shares a barber with Ryan, who repeated the story to Leva, who told JT about it. And it's interesting because he admits to talking about Vanita flippantly, and you know that this beautiful black woman, his quote, is you know into him or whatever. And she says that she's still standing 10 toes down for JT and she wants to confront Ryan about it. But she's just assuming that Ryan flat out lied about it when the barber told JT in that scene with Leva, when they called him, that if the way that he presented the information to Ryan was a problem and started the problem, then he was sorry about that. So I'm not sure Ryan's the one at fault here. I mean, again, I haven't seen the rest of it play out, but like, unless they're just mad at him for trying to be messy and repeating it to Leva to try to like stir up drama. But like, it doesn't sound like he repeated it incorrectly from what it sounds like JT did say something. And then Barber took with that and ran it and repeated it in a certain way. And then Ryan told Leva about it. I feel like, again, it's semantics, it's confusing, and it's very specific. And it's just sort of like this whole thing continues to be weird between them. I don't know. And then we obviously do get the scene with Craig. Flash forward 5 months after his breakup from Paige, it's edited like a horror movie at the beginning. Him and Austin and Shep sit down. Again, I haven't seen that full scene, but I did see a clip of it. So yeah, that's that on Southern Charm and Summer House. So that's it for now. But enjoy this really great conversation with Brian Moylan all about the state of the Real Housewives reunion. Check out his newsletter for Vulture, the Housewives Bulletin. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. Have a great weekend and see you next week. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Dame Brian Moylan, the president and founder of Vulture's Housewives Institute Bulletin, which is a bi-weekly newsletter about all things Bravo and Real Housewives, which I love. In a recent dispatch, Brian wrote something really, what I thought was really thought-provoking about the state of the Housewives reunion. And given that we had just wrapped three pretty memorable reunions, I would say, in Roni, Salt Lake, and Potomac, I figured it was a good time to have Brian on to talk about this, using as sort of a jumping off point to talk about these reunions and sort of what they tell us about where we are in 2025 with the Bravo reunion. So, Brian, always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm excited to talk about reunions.
Yes.
I famously hated writing recaps for them. So this is what my kind of article was about, because we used to do recaps of the reunions and I would always be like, I hate writing about reunions. And I would do it. And so the editors were finally like, we're not doing reunions anymore. And I was like, great. But then the past, you know, with Monica on the last Salt Lake reunion, everything with this Salt Lake, Roni with that. Yeah. Scandoval, all those things, like it started to become necessary to write about reunions again. So my article was kind of about how the reunions have become more integral, I think, to our understanding of the season and our understanding of what's happening than they have been in the past.
So did you just hate recapping them, or did you hate reunions overall? Like, did you not like watching them?
Some of them I enjoyed more than others. I mean, and there obviously have been like some good ones and some bad ones. But I felt like, especially in the early years, it was just a lot of going over what happened over the course of the season. And no one's really held accountable. There's no forward movement. It's just like having the same fights over and over again. And it's like, why are we doing this? But there were definitely plenty that I enjoyed watching. But from a writing standpoint, it's just hard because once you've seen the outfits, they're the same outfits, you know, there's like no clothes to talk about. Yeah, there's nothing happening. So it's like, even on a boring episode, there's like some bartender who's funny looking and I can spend like 100 words totally. Like, oh my God, who is this bartender? But there's like none of that in the reunions. And so it's just like, and I feel like all the things that they're talking about, I had already addressed like over the course of the season. So it's just felt like, you know, there wasn't that much to say or that much for me to kind of add to.
Right. Totally. And I feel like you're right that like there were obviously moments where reunions popped off. They gave us iconic moments. And like,
yes.
Yeah. I think about like Atlanta and sort of in that sort of season 5, 6, 7 era, like those were like some incredible. I mean, actually, I think Atlanta kind of always had good reunions, but like,
well, no, there was that one, remember, where they decided they weren't fighting at the reunion and they just all, it was like, maybe like season 3,
sure.
season 4. And they just all like sat there and were right. Like, next question, Andy.
Right. But it's like the early ones were like Kim and Nene going back and forth with like the yellow top and the purple top. Right. But like there definitely were those early ones which just kind of felt like you were recapping. But like, I feel like as the years have gone on, the things that are sort of filled in are like, obviously the women are watching the show back, but it's now. And we'll talk about this, but like social media is obviously a huge component and sort of getting the viewer feedback and the response to that and how they take that in and either, you know, try to reflect what fans want or not in the reunion is also sort of an opportunity for them as well.
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that we're starting to see now we're talking about like, oh, Giselle had a great reunion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and she did.
Yeah. 100%. But like, you know, we're starting like, the performance on the reunion is like a different kind of skill set and a different kind of thing as opposed
to... And it can reframe.
Yeah, exactly. And it can save you or it can doom you or, you know, right. Yeah, all of, and anything in between.
So in essence, I feel like one of the things that your piece points to is a trend in Housewives where like the seasons aren't ending in the way they used to end, where they're ending with like less finality, less closure because, I mean... Roni, the most recent season of Roni, the last 2 seasons of Salt Lake, I think this upcoming season, this current season of Beverly Hills is going to end.
Correct.
They're all ended on cast trips. And that gives the reunion more heft and more of an importance in like either continuing those threads or giving us that closure that we're not getting from the season anymore. And I think that was such an apt thing to point out, but I had never seen it sort of kind of corralled together, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. Because you think about like Scary Island, you know, was at the end of the season, but then they come back and they have a party and they can all talk about it and whatever. And you have that kind of like, you know, the trip is often the climax of the season because they're all stuck together having to deal with their issues, you know, whatever. And yeah, and when it ends on receipts, proof, timeline, screenshots, they don't answer any of the questions that all of that brought up. And so that's when you're like, girl, I need to see you at the reunion. And yeah, and I think that there's that idea we have now where, oh, she's going to have a lot to answer for at the reunion. Like, because they don't have a chance to answer for it on the show, it's now getting saved for us. And so, yeah, and especially the last 2 seasons of Salt Lake.
Yeah.
The reunion, and same with Scandoval, the reunions felt more like a finale than the finales did.
Totally, totally. And I feel like the receipts proof timeline, that was almost proof of concept for this new idea where like you don't yes. have to come back from the trip. We can just cut the cameras right there. Like I feel right. like that worked out so well for that franchise that like, I think it's great that more people are following suit. I really do.
Right. And so I think that, yes, we're in a good place. With
yeah.
Yeah, because you're right. Like Beverly Hills, it's going to end on the trip. And there's going to be all sorts of stuff to discuss once they get right. home and what happens. And yeah. And I also think that because, like you said, with social media, we're living a lot of this stuff in real time. And there's always so much between things airing and whatever with, you know, so-and-so's getting a divorce. So-and-so
right.
got cheated on, whatever. Carl and Lindsay break up, you know, and fans are always like, right. Get the cameras back up.
Yeah, I know.
And that can't always be the answer, you know?
No. Before we get into the reunion, I feel like we kind of have to talk about a little bit what we lose, quote unquote, by just ending on the cast trip, which is like they come back from the trip. Maybe we have like 2 to 3 episodes where we're like, we're kind of wrapping things in a bow, or they're trying to, you know, it's like we have a big finale party that can either be like, there are moments where that was like explosive, right? There are moments yes. where like that can be like a really great ending to a season. But then there are also moments where it's like, where it kind of whimpers out, like nothing really happened at this big finale event. And we sort of like wipe our hands of it. And then we get the title cards and the closing credit cards, or whatever you want to call them. And like, that's it. And like, so yeah. it can go either way, I feel like.
Well, and I feel like in the old system where they would like have a trip and they'd come back in that finale, they would tie up all the personal storylines. And I think
yeah.
sometimes those are good and sometimes those are bad. And so like, if you look at this season of Beverly Hills, they're about to go on the trip next season. So we've seen Erica's house. We've
yes.
had Boz's final meeting with her fertility doctor. It's like, I'm sick of that shit. Like I don't
yeah.
need,
me too.
You know, to hear about that again in a few weeks, like tie that all up. Great. Done. And then we can move into the real finale, which is like them on the trip all together, dealing with whatever may come up.
Right.
You know, on the trip.
Yeah. And we know that a trip is a pressure cooker. So like it's yeah. like bound to result in a good ending. You know what I mean? And it's like, I also think about just some of the finale parties we've seen over the years, and it just feels like they're all sort of making their way around a room, trying to like get to the one person that they need to like have that closure with. And it's like,
yes,
I would much rather them do that on a reunion couch where like, maybe they can break the fourth wall a little bit more. Maybe it can be like a little less forced, and like, they really have to hash it out in a real way with Andy moderating it.
Yes. No. Well, and I think that's the other good thing is that, you know, sometimes you'll see women have conflict and they go off to talk about it themselves, which sometimes I think is a good idea. But sometimes I think we need the women there to hold that person and Andy to be like, yeah. no, that's not true. Or like, that's not what you said then. Or, you know, other people kind of giving their opinions about things. I think that that's really important. And, you know, to the same point, you know, I would rather Sutton and Dorit be stuck on a trip together and have to like force something because they can't escape each other, rather than like, oh, we're at the party and now we have to have a fight.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Yeah.
And it's much more honestly realistic to see them on a trip, maybe have a blow up one more time versus like come back to Beverly Hills, have an event where they like kind of quote unquote squash their beef. But we know it's not actually a real squash because in a couple months time, they're going to be on a reunion couch arguing about the same thing again. So it's like, let's just cut yeah. that out of the equation and like, just keep it.
Absolutely. And I think the other good thing about it that we saw so many times is they squashed the beef in the finale because they knew they had to. And then they yeah. watched the season back and they learned new
stuff.
It
reignites it.
And they see. Yeah. And so at least now it's like, okay, we haven't squashed the beef. We're saving it for the reunion. Tamara and Shannon can hug for the millionth time and say they forgive each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, yeah. Okay. Great, guys.
Yeah. So in your article, you quote Tom Smythe, who is your colleague who's been on my show before. And he was talking about it. It's a quote from his recap of the first part of Salt Lake. He says, whereas other shows in the franchise sometimes feel like they're struggling to get enough footage to hit their episode quota, Salt Lake City went cameras down essentially mid-fight between Whitney and Lisa. Had they waited for a full wrap-up of the season, they never stopped filming. That's why on Salt Lake, more than any other show, the reunion feels like continuations of unfinished business rather than just rehashing. So like when it comes to the season of Salt Lake, that's absolutely correct. You were absolutely correct in your piece. It's like there were so many things that just felt unfinished. And
yeah,
we had to do it in this setting.
Yeah. And I think that it was really good, too, that, you know, at the reunion, I liked that Sean, Justin, all the husbands were there to talk about it, you know, because so much of it had to do with the husbands. And I did feel like we got to a place where we can finally put all of those fights between Lisa and Whitney and between Meredith and Angie K, like those things, like to bed forever. So that we don't have to come back next season and fight about that shit again because you're still mad about it from the reunion.
So with this season of Salt Lake, though, like in the reunion, I'm thinking about some. I mean, like we come off of the phone game, basically, that Heather made them all play. And like it literally just cuts. Like we didn't really even see, like, because even in the season, they were sort of teasing that like the next morning after that game, like we saw some couple clips of like them being like really shook to their core, like getting their makeup done in their hotel rooms the next morning. That didn't air on the finale, really. Like we didn't see that next morning. We just wiped our hands of it. And like even I remember seeing this picture, like one of their makeup people posted like a recap of the trip to Mexico they had taken for the finale.
Oh my God.
And one of them had in this sort of like montage they posted a quick video of the entire cast like arm in arm posing at the airport the next morning after the finale. And I was like, learning that even was like, wait, I need to know like where we landed with this game if like they're able to like be arm in arm like that. So it gets into this thing of like what you said in your piece, which is like we have all this other information that we get as the season airs that we need to inject into the conversation around it.
No, absolutely. And the shit like that is just like crazy.
Like when we came into that reunion, what did you sort of want the most closure on? What did you want the answers on? Do you remember?
I really wanted Meredith to read her worst thing that she said about somebody.
Same.
Because she never did.
Same.
But whatever. And I feel like there was a lot of stuff. I think that what was so great about Salt Lake is that you did see a lot of things resolved in that final. Like you saw Angie and Mary have a great moment. You saw Whitney and Heather have a great moment and really get over a year's worth of shit. And so coming into that reunion, I had a lot of questions. I think for Bronwyn, just because we learned so much about what was going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I really had I wanted to know more from Angie and Lisa about what was going on with them. And obviously, like, the Whitney and Lisa feud that kind of ignited at the end there. Like, I wanted to see how that was going to kind of play out. But
yeah, definitely.
That's the thing about Salt Lake is those relationships are always, like, shifting so
quickly.
They're
so malleable. Yeah.
Right. That you never know, like, quite what you're going to get. And also, I really wanted to see, because Mary had such a great journey over the course of the season with Robert Jr. and with the other ladies. And I wanted to see the other women react to Mary after they knew everything that was going on, which I think might have explained for them some of her behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throughout the course of the season.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that I think about Bronwyn and I'm like, I think about how, like, you know, I think she's such a great addition to the show. She's such a good find for them. But like there was this thing that emerged as the season went on where like the story that we got in filming versus in a confessional versus on Watch What Happens Live versus on social media, kind of like they weren't always like completely different, but there was like enough difference where I wanted her to explain sort of what the baseline story was, what the baseline truth was. And like, I think she in some ways did that and in some ways still left us hanging a little bit, I think. And like, I think that's a compelling argument for to sort of bring it all together at on the reunion couch.
Yeah.
But she, again, left enough dangling to be like, all right, next season, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also loved when Lisa was like, oh, I have receipts about that necklace. And I was like, yes, please.
The jeweler. Yeah, the jeweler. Yeah. That was really fascinating to me, honestly.
No, absolutely. And that's why, because I was watching the season, I was like, God, you know, and you see how the fans are reacting, like on social media or just talking to people, you know, like we do. You know, I was like, I like Bronwyn too, but I felt she was more foolish.
Yeah.
I felt she was a little bit more full of shit than everyone thought she was. And then it was like, and by the time we got to the end of the season, it's like, oh yeah, you are kind of full of shit. And I think the reunion just proves it. Not that I'm saying that makes her a bad housewife or a bad addition, or I don't like her, but like, so many of our housewives, she's a little bit full of shit.
and listen, like, I don't want somebody, I've said this, like, I don't want somebody who is like picture perfect to come onto the show.
And
I want there to be some sort of, you know, holes in the armor a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it's better to be complicated like that.
When I was doing research for my book, I talked to someone who studies like media studies, an academic, and they study kind of like media literacy. And they were saying that housewives in particular makes us better consumers of media from just what you said, because you have to triangulate what I saw on the show, what they posted on Instagram, what they said on Watch What Happens Live, the receipts Lisa posted about them and the reunion, whatever. And you have to triangulate all those things and say, okay, I believe this and I don't believe this, or I believe you and, you know, you definitely bought that jewelry. No, you didn't at all buy that jewelry, and like figure it all out. And I think that that's one of the great joys of Housewives. And when these kind of new revitalized reunions that we're seeing, they're not just recapping the season before, they're helping add to that. They're helping us add to our, you know, the evidence, as it were, that we have
all these
about
small
how
mysteries.
We should decide how we feel about, you know, whatever the fuck.
I literally yesterday saw a funny TikTok that was like from this girl who was like, I just realized there are two types of Bravo fans. There's one that just takes everything that we're presented with as at face value and doesn't question it at all. And then there's the everyone else who just like has to question everything. And it's just, it's funny. And like, then that's a whole other topic. The Potomac reunion, I feel like, and you pointed this out, is like, there are basically two really big threads that required this sort of new kind of reunion, which is obviously the Karen Huger of it all, where it's like, we left off in season with her still maintaining that she was going to be, you know, she was
re-vindicated.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, we get the footage, we get the charge, we get the sentences coming up. We said she's going to rehab. All this stuff happened between filming and the reunion. And we needed not only information and details on that, but we also needed the other women's reactions to that. And then the other thing was the Mia Thornton of it all, which is like, oh, much more convoluted in terms of like ink, G, paternity.
Yes.
Who is she with? But still, there have been so many updates on that. So I feel like Potomac was so emblematic of this trend that you're pointing out.
Well, and I think that, as we were saying, Mia needed to sit with everybody.
Yes.
And have them all say, but you told me this, but you told me this, but what about this? Because she would always she was always weaseling the story in little different directions. And when the group would try to confront her, she'd be like, no, not now, no, not now, no, not now. And it's like, no, you need to sit with everybody and listen to what they have to say and hear their frustrations and answer those questions. And I think we finally got that. And we saw the answer, which was Mia pussied out and left.
She thought it was going to be a big move. No.
And
It was a terrible move.
Terrible move.
Not only was it a terrible move, but they were literally like, it felt like they were pushing her out the door so they can get that camera guy's footage out of his camera so they could show us what happened when Eddie called TJ. Like, they were like, girl, go. Like, literally just go so we can get this footage.
Right. And they're like, Eddie's like, Mia has left. And they're like, okay, but where's the camera? Like, nobody cared about Mia at all, including at home watching.
Oh, as a viewer, I was like, leave. Get in that SUV so they can take that tape out.
Oh my God. The worst part was when Mia was leaving and there was that like wardrobe assistant gay, like as she's like ignoring him,
around.
He's like running behind him, trying to like untie her dress. I was like, gay, give
poor
it
guy.
Up.
Poor guy. Yeah, poor guy. Oh my God.
Let Mia storm off. This is over.
No, totally. Yeah. So the Mia thing whimpered out, but we still had the moment of the women holding her accountable. And the Karen stuff, I mean, it was so compelling in so many different ways, because not only did we have her not there to answer for it. So I actually feel like, obviously, in a lot of ways, I wanted her to be there to receive the questions from Andy, from viewers, from the women. But I also think in some weird way, her not being there freed up all the other women to talk about her in a less guarded, more truthful manner. You know?
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that they were kind of saying, you know, it's kind of like after Jax went on that podcast, it was like, oh, I have a cocaine problem. And Brittany was like, oh, thank God, now we can finally talk about it.
That, you know? Literally, the floodgates are open. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like all the women were like, well, she's going to prison, so we're just going to say it. You know, she's not
say
here.
We've heard. She goes to Illegal Seafood in the afternoons. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Have you been to Illegal Seafood?
I've actually never been to Illegal Seafood. Have you?
I have. I might have been to that one in Northern Virginia. I did live in D.C. for a while.
I'm from D.C.
Know.
Maybe I should
go
to that.
Oh, girl.
Or Excite.
Pilgrimage.
I should go interview that bartender. Oh, my God.
But you're totally right about that. Yes, I think her not being there was good. But I was so mad about that video of her and Ray. It's like, still, she can't. Oh, it was my medication. It's like, Karen. Oh, we've given you so many chances to just be fucking real with us. Like, it's amazing to me that Karen has played the politics of that show perfectly for almost a decade. And she has managed to fuck this up royally. Like, I've never seen a housewife play a situation worse than Karen played this whole thing.
She had three video packages. Three. You know, she had three opportunities to be really real. And like the fact that Giselle, who within the reunion was one of her biggest, not, I wouldn't call her like her defender, but she wasn't like abandoning Karen, I think, in terms of how she was talking about it. And she was being pretty real about it. But even Giselle was like, turn this off. Like, this is bullshit. Like they're covering all their bases in this video of like, not only talking about the antidepressants and the drinking, but also blue eyes, but
blue
also
eyes.
Like, oh, it's like, my God, yes. This is not what this moment calls for. It's not, it's just.
No. And that's, what's crazy is her covering it up like this is, I think, going to keep her from being able to come back in the way that we've seen Luann come back, Shannon Bedore come back, like anyone who's suffered, Erica Jane come back. You know, it's like, you need to at some point be like, I was wrong. I fucked up. I'm sorry. And Karen can't seem capable of doing that. And during the season, I kind of get it. Like, yes, the case is ongoing. There are legal issues. Sure. But girl, you're guilty now.
Right.
Like, you know, jig is up. Just admit it.
I know. And it's like, people would have more respect for her if she would just admit it, you know? And like I say, this is as a longtime Karen fan. Like, I have been in her corner, and it's really frustrating. And within the reunion, it just felt like she calls herself, I said this in a recent episode, but she calls herself the fence, and it felt like the fence was taken out. You know what I mean? Like, and like, I almost think that like Wendy and Giselle were able to get into that banter that they got into because she wasn't there. Like, they had that a little bit in the season, but like, it felt like they only could really get there in a reunion. Because I love watching Giselle and Wendy go back and forth in this reunion. I thought it was fantastic, but they weren't doing that in season.
No, you're absolutely right. And I always said that what made Potomac great was that it was a rivalry of equals between Giselle and Karen, where they're like friends, but always holding each other accountable. Always, you know, I hate you a little bit. I know that you're full of shit, but I love you. And we started to see that same dynamic between Wendy and Giselle. And I was like, I know we'll be fine without Karen.
Yeah,
because, you know, we have this. And I've never been a huge Wendy fan, but Wendy had a reunion. And when she kept telling Stacey, they're going to play that tape on you, girl. They're going to play that tape on you, girl. I was like, oh, but yes, they are.
They sure
are. Warn her.
Though they did edge us with that tape. Like, they, like, right when I thought they were going to put it up, like, there were three times when I was like, give me the footage. And they held out, which I think was really smart.
No, absolutely. And girl, it paid off.
It did.
I watched I only watched the extended version, and it was still too short.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, yeah.
I think that this gets into another, I think, utility of the reunion, really, or like opportunity for the reunion. Because like, the Potomac season wasn't great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. And it merited a two-part reunion. But because the reunion was so good, we got three excellent parts.
Yep.
Not only does it provide some you know, more discussion and closure opportunity for some of the big threads, but it also is an opportunity to tee us up for next season. And I feel like, and to sort of rewrite the narrative of the franchise, and this is like the perfect example of how a reunion can do that. It's like Potomac was not in a good spot. And we were like, what's going on here? And then it's now I'm like, bring on season 10 right now.
Yes. No, and I feel like New York was almost the opposite, where it was like we had all these questions, especially for Bryn and Uba. I think Uba did a great job, but Bryn, like Karen, no accountability, can't face up to it, just cried.
Right.
You know, and but also, you know, like Mia, I was glad that Bryn could be in that situation because she would tell different stories to different people. And so when they're all finally there to talk about everything she's told them and to say, oh, no, I didn't say that, I said this, what, it set the record straight, that it just made it look even more
ridiculous
what she was saying.
It hammered home the narrative that we had. It didn't rewrite anything, really, honestly.
No, but it also didn't change the dynamics enough that I'm like, oh my God, get them into the next season. But I will say we did see some strong performances from Jenna, really holding Bryn accountable, from Sai, who is best when she's mean, showing her mean side.
I agree.
And so it did make me have a bit more faith in the players that we have, that they can do this job. I just think we need to get the right circumstances around them for those good traits to come out again that aren't, you know, maybe Bryn stretching the truth.
Yeah, I think Bryn has to go, because I feel like she's been such a domineering force and personality on these first two seasons of the reboot. And I feel like in some ways they've all sort of like followed that lead in a little bit. And like, they need to be freed from the way that she approaches filming the show, which is all they know. You know what I mean? And
yes.
So like,
yes,
for me, one of the good parts about the Roni reunion, I agree, like the mix isn't quite right, but like it did feel like sitting on those two couches that they were more entrenched as a group because they had gone through this experience together. Like, and I don't know if that was because of what happened in Puerto Rico or just like, enough time had gone on this show for them to like feel that way. But it did feel like at that reunion, I was similarly to what you just said, which is like, okay, there are some people here who feel really connected and they genuinely talk a lot. They've gone through experiences together and they can talk. Like, we weren't just like creating new drama for the sake of creating new drama based on like text messages. Like, this was like real shit they were talking about.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, that made me hopeful in a way, I would say. Not fully, but in a way.
Well, and that was one of my problems with the old reunion stuff is like in the era of when everybody had a binder or like screenshot, like whatever.
Oh, Monique's binder was iconic.
I know. I mean, the binder was iconic.
Yes.
But the point is that they would bring like new ammunition to the reunion. And it's like, girl, if we didn't see this, I don't care. You know, like, I can't tell, you know, I did love the jeweler stuff, but do I believe the jeweler or not? I don't fucking know. I didn't see this lady, you know, or it's like, oh, I heard from so-and-so. Yeah. It's like, don't introduce new stuff. I don't want new stuff. I just want you to kind of like put the old stuff in a new context.
I'm curious what you think about this, because I feel like the other way to follow the thread that we've seen more and more in recent years, obviously, is picking cameras back up. And I do think that, like, they've gotten a little liberal with it. You know, it's been a little bit like, did this really merit picking the cameras back up? So I'm curious what you think where you draw the line for that and sort of where you want to see that, or where you just want to wait for the reunion to get those answers.
Maybe what we should do is that everybody gets like, you have like a cameras backup slot. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, okay, we wrap on this date, but in 6 months, we're filming again for 3 days. just in case anything happens.
Yeah, you know? Honestly, though.
And then we go into the reunion. And then they might get to the 3 days and be like, okay, no one got divorced. No one got killed. No one's in a DUI. Like, who cares? But, you know, you might, like, get some good stuff. But, yeah, I just think that we have both started demanding they pick cameras up too much. And, yeah, it's the bar has been lowered too much. So I think either you need to just make it, like, a little check-in afterwards and see how everybody's doing, because, you know, so much does happen over the course of the season that has to do with the women, but also so much happens in their lives that sometimes need accounting for. So yeah, I would either say always pick cameras back up or never pick cameras back up. This, like,
it was like, because obviously Scandoval 100% merited it, but then like right after that, Drew Sidora gets divorced or files for divorce from Ralph, and I'm like, I don't think we need the cameras back up, because also they're not going to be telling the full truth in that environment. They're going to be telling more of they're going to be pushed more towards the truth in a reunion setting. But like, we didn't need to pick cameras back up on Drew Sidora filing for divorce. Even
Drew
if it was a race to the courthouse.
Drew Sidora would not know the truth if it sat on her face. I mean, sorry, Drew Sidora. No, but then again, like, Carl and Lindsay break up.
Oh, we needed it. Even Paige and Craig in this most recent Summer House thing. And I loved the reveal of that too at the end of the, like, you know, tweaked reunion season trailer at the end of the premiere. That was perfection.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So I do think it's a very slippery slope.
It is.
Yeah. But I think right now, like, the cases have just gotten more and more attenuated and that's the thing about, you know, I love all these shows, but when you get to Jen Shaw's arrest, when you get to Scandoval, when you get to things like that, those are once in a generation occurrences. Like, we're never going to get another Scandoval.
No.
And if we do, it's going to be like 10 years away.
Or contrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or contrived. And so we can't keep trying to, like, gin up But I'm also good with everything not being at that high a level. You know,
me too.
I'm also happy with a nice, easy, breezy, beautiful cover girl season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which we've just had.
Totally. I'm like, even that, I feel like Potomac for next season could easily be that, where we're just sort of like having fun, like, low key drama between the women. It's nothing too crazy. But the other thing that I thought about is, like, the other new thing that we saw recently, and I don't think I've talked to you since about this, is like the OC reunion ended with cameras picking back up after the reunion filmed.
Yes.
Which was like, that was a first of its kind.
No, right? Absolutely. And that was because of...
That was because they had found out something about... They had gone to dinner with John and Alexis, and he said that he had heard her that night crash the car, right? And he didn't come out.
Right. And see, and that's the thing is, like, we do need that information because I don't want the John Jansen coming into the next season.
Right.
Yeah.
Tied
and
up in
we're like back on that storyline again. Like, right. Just end it now. Okay. We know everything. We already thought he and Alexis sucked. So it's not like, we need to go back into that for next season. But yeah, I'm glad that we knew.
And it helps solidify Tamara and Shannon as being sort of on a better path, I guess, for Tamara to be more behind Shannon. So another quote in your piece, Brian, that as we sort of wrap, sort of get to the end here, you say that many fans liken Bravo to sports for women and gay men. And what these reunions are proving is that there is no longer an off season. We don't want to have to hold on to all this supplemental information and carry it into the next season. We want to see it addressed in real-ish time. The reunions have become the last word. I totally agree. And that sort of gets into what we're talking about. But is there any worry on your part about sort of like the sustainability of there not being an off season, like for the women to always have to be on, or like, you know what I mean? Like, do you think about that at all?
No, absolutely. And I've been saying, I should write about this in my next newsletter, preview.
Okay.
But I feel like there needs to be a mandatory sabbatical. Like, maybe after 3, 4, 5 years, you're not on you need a year off, collect yourself, live your life, work on your business, figure it out, turn off social media, come back rejuvenated. I mean, Kyle Richards has been doing this for 15 years now, and you see her fraying at the edges.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
It's
for
like,
sure.
Kyle needs a year off.
Yeah. And I think that would do her wonders.
Yes. And I think that it should, you know, even if they don't want you to, or the women don't want to, I think that they're just going to come back better than ever. And, you know, I always say this about Miami, is that what I think made the Miami reboot great is they are the only ones who had it and lost it. And yeah. They're like, we know what will happen if this goes away. And so we're going to do what we need to keep this and to be sane and to be good about it. And I think that that has done wonders for Miami. And I think it would do well for everybody else. And also, I think if Kyle's not on next season because she's on sabbatical, the dynamics change, you know, the bonds form, and then she comes back in and it's a different show. And maybe she's not as prime as she used to be, and other people get to star and whatever. So yeah, I know it's a slog because they're filming for 3, 4, 5 months, and then they're doing their confessionals, and then they're on Watch What Happens Live, and then they're doing press, and then they're on social media.
It's a full year.
Yeah. And I appreciate everything these women sacrifice for our entertainment, but I also think that we need to take care of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make the show better, and just on like a humane basis that, you know, girl, give Kyle a break.
I think the sabbatical thing is such an excellent point. Cause I immediately think of like five names of people who could have used that in the past or could currently use that. And I don't want to say goodbye to them for good, but it just feels like when you lose the plot or you get too in the weeds.
Yeah.
You need to get some oxygen away from the cameras.
Yeah. No, if they had just put Melissa and Teresa on sabbatical for a year, might have come back and been like, I'm not fighting about this anymore. Like, we're over it. And then, you know, it wouldn't have ended the whole show.
Yeah, I think it's happening on Potomac right now. I think I could see Robin and or Candace back in a season or two. And like they would be different. They would land differently for me as a viewer.
Absolutely. Especially Robin, now that she's been on Traitors, like we've seen a different side to her. I mean, Giselle has had to learn how to do the show without Robin,
which is important,
which I think then you re-add Robin to the show, it's going to be a whole different dynamic between them. So yeah, no, you're totally right. And I'm usually opposed because fans always say like, if they brought back Robin, they'd save the show. If they brought back Dorinda, they'd save the show. And to me, the future is usually in finding new people, like the next person,
Stacey,
who's going to be
the Bronwyn, the Jen Bergeronti.
Exactly. And so, but I do think that there is something about putting someone on pause.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is
not as a euphemism for being fired.
No. Like a literal defined pause. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last thing you say, going back to the sports metaphor, the reunion is no longer a highlight reel of the season. It is the playoffs. And that gets into sort of the final utility use case of a reunion is the trophy hasn't been won yet. And I feel like in Housewives parlance, the contract hasn't been secured, you know? And so and that's always been the case, I guess, because these are season to season contracts. But like that plays into this whole thing that we talked about today too, which is like, that is your last opportunity to prove that you are essential to the show.
Yeah. And I think we've seen in the past, more so than now, where the women who were a little bit on the outs, you know, or had a little bit of a boring season, like come way too hard at the reunion. Like, I don't think that's the right strategy either. Mm-hmm. But I do think you saw like Monica at that Salt Lake City reunion. There is a world in which she could have come in and been like, you're right.
Yeah,
I was
absolutely
wrong. I fucked all you guys over. How can you forgive me, whatever, and try to work on her relationships with the women. But instead she was like, no, I stand by it and you all suck and whatever. And I feel like she lost her spot. Whereas Wendy on Potomac comes in with Eddie, asserts her dominance, shows that she's central to the show, had lots of great things to say, turns on Karen, mm-hmm. setting up a whole new dynamic for her next season. And it's like, great job, Wendy. Like, you have secured your spot 100%.
Yeah. Or Tamara comes into the OC reunion, finally showing some sort of like grace to Shannon. And it's like, that's what we needed from her all season. And if she hadn't done that, it's sort of like, girl, I don't know if you understand what this job demands of you right now, which is like, let it simmer down. So
But that's always been Tamara's gift. Is she knows knows how far to push it, and she knows when to be like, I'm sorry. Like, let's forgive each other. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And more of the ladies could stand to use that. But yeah, I think that that's what the reunions are great for. Yeah, girl. Contracts go out three weeks after the reunions for a reason.
There we go.
You know?
Exactly. That's why it's like when those reports come out, like before the seasons are, hasn't even ended, where it's like, blah, blah, blah's not getting asked back. Like, don't listen to OK Magazine. Okay. Like,
oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, Brian, this has been exactly what I wanted it to be. Like, I really loved a lot of things you brought up, and I just wanted to pick your brain about it. So, where can people subscribe to the newsletter? Again, it's every other week. It's great. And they'll find, you know, mini articles like this in there.
Yeah. It is at vulture.com/housewives, and you can sign up for it. It's free. And yeah, there's lots of fun stuff in there. And then you can find me on all social media platforms at Brian J. Moylan. And I'm currently recapping Summer House, Southern Charm, Beverly Hills, and Survivor of all things.
Ooh.
Over at vulture.com. And those recaps go up right after the episode finished airing on the East Coast. So go wild.
Wow, that's a full plate. That is a full plate of recaps right there.
Ooh, girl, I know. It's my busy season. Ask me in the summer, I'm like, I need money. I only got one show.
Bravo, spread the wealth. Brian, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll do this again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.